Look, I told you I'd pay 8,000 even. Take it or leave it. Carl is an excellent negotiator, really cutthroat. When I was a senior, Carl would take either Gabby or me to do all of his negotiating, so we learned how to haggle. Mechanics, salesmen, plumbers, you name 'em, Carl made us negotiate prices with them directly. When Carl's Jeep needed a new set of wheels, he stood out around the corner from the shop as I went in and tried to talk the guy down on his behalf. When I'd go back out to him to report the new price, Carl would shake his head and tell me I could do better. And I always did. I was especially proud when the tire guy threw in a free car detailing after my prodding. Gabby once got the guy repairing the hot water heater to come down $500. Carl and Tina took us out to Benihana that night to celebrate the victory. Carl has always said that people who don't haggle are suckers, and we aren't suckers. I'm buying a car today. Doesn't have to be from you, I say to the manager. The manager rolls his eyes.
All right, he says. 8,100 and it's a deal.
I shake his hand, and they start drawing up the paperwork. I put 3,000 down and drive off the lot with a car. There goes most of my money. But it's okay, because I have a plan. When I get far enough from the dealership, I pull over to the side of the road and start hitting my hands against the steering wheel, yelling into the air, trying to get out all the nervous energy that's in me. I'm doing this. I'm making a life for myself. I am doing this. I call Carl at his office.
Hello, he says, his voice buttery and pleased to hear from me. Tell me you're taking the job.
I'm taking the job.
Outstanding. I'm going to put you on the phone with Joyce, our HR person here. She will talk to you about a start date, salary, benefits, all of that good stuff. If you don't talk her up to at least 42, I'm going to be disappointed in you.
I laugh. I just paid $8,100 for a $9,500 car. I got this. I promise.
That's what I want to hear,
he says. Carl, seriously, thank you for this.
Thank you,
he says.
Honestly, this worked out perfectly. Rosalie showed up an hour and a half late this morning and didn't even bother with an excuse. She denies it, but a patient told me last week that she swore at them. So I'm eager to let her go, and I'm just glad we don't have to go through resumes to replace her.
I laugh. All right, I say. I'm excited to start working with you, boss. He laughs and puts me through to Joyce. She and I talk for about 30 minutes. She says she's going to give Rosalie notice, so my start date will be in 2 weeks. But if Rosalie decides not to stay the 2 weeks, the job could start sooner. I tell her I'm okay with that. That's why sometimes it really is best to hire someone you know, Joyce says. I know I'm in HR and I'm supposed to say that you should vet all the applicants, but the truth is, when you have a personal connection, it just makes it easier to be flexible. She offers me $40,000, and, hot off the trail of my car purchase, I talk her up to $44,000. I get full health benefits. And the good news, she says, is that we cover the rest of your family at a very low cost. Oh, I say. Well, it's just me. Oh, okay, she says. And you'll have 2 weeks paid vacation a year, and, of course, maternity leave if necessary. I laugh. Won't be necessary, I say. She laughs back. I hear you. We finish discussing odds and ends, and soon everything is settled. Welcome to Hudson, Stokes, and Johnson Pediatrics, she says. Thank you, I say. Glad to join. I know he's still working, but I find it impossible not to call Ethan.
What's up, Buttercup?
He says. I'm surprised he answered. Do you have a minute?
Sure, he says. Let me just step outside.
I can hear him walk through a door, and the background quiets down.
What's up?
You'd better not ever try to negotiate with me, I tell him, because I just talked the car salesman down $1,400, and I talked the human resources lady up $4,000. So basically, I'm a force to be reckoned with. Ethan laughs.
A car owner and a job? Have her.
You're damn right.
And did you find Charlemagne's home?
They can't see her until 6, I say. So I bought the car, and now I'm headed back. I'm thinking I'll just kill some time in the waiting room, see if the doctor doesn't free up early.
6?
Yeah, she's there now. I had to leave a credit card so they'd keep her there until I get back. Ethan laughs again.
What, like collateral?
That's exactly what I said. He laughs.
Listen, I'm leaving here in a half hour. What part of town are you in? I'll come meet you.
Oh, that would be awesome, I say. I'm in West L.A. The vet is off of Sepulveda.
Jesus, that's far from my house, he says. You took a bus there?
Yeah, I say.
With Charlemagne?
I may or may not have hidden her in a backpack. Ethan laughs.
Why don't I come meet you and we can grab an early dinner? Find a happy hour somewhere. I know of a Mexican place close to the animal hospital. I could buy you a celebratory burrito.
I'm in. I get lost more than once on my way there. Then I try to take an alley, only to realize there is a big truck coming at me from the opposite direction. I have to reverse out slowly and blindly back onto the street and find another way. But I get there eventually. That's me in a nutshell. I'll get there eventually. I pull into the parking lot of the restaurant, and Ethan is waiting for me by the entrance.
Is this the new car?
He says dramatically.
I like it. Unexpected. I thought for sure you'd pull up in something cherry red.
I laugh at him. I'm way more into practical decisions nowadays, I say. Stable guys, full-time jobs.
Stray dogs,
he adds. I laugh and correct him. I am merely helping Charlemagne find her true family, I say as we head into the restaurant. But the stable guy and the full-time job, those are... I find myself intending to finish the sentence by saying, for keeps, but I quickly realize I don't want to do that. It's too early to be talking about how serious Ethan and I are, or may be in the future. We have a history together, and we have potential to be something very real, but we just started dating again. I think the best thing to do is allow myself to imagine the future in my head, but not put it into words just yet. Which is to say that I think it's very possible that Ethan is the one for me. But I'd rather be dead than say it out loud. Luckily, Ethan appears to be on the exact same page, because he looks at me, grabs my hand, squeezes it, and says,
I hear you.
The hostess asks if we want to be seated in the dining room or at the bar, and we go for the bar. As we sit down, Ethan orders guacamole.
I'm very proud of you,
he says when the waitress leaves. Thank you, I say. I'm proud of me, too. I mean, I didn't like where my old habits got me, you know, and I feel really motivated to turn over a new leaf. I think things have been working out for me so far, partly because I have people believing in me. Gabby and the Hudsons and Ethan are so encouraging that it makes me feel I can do all the things I set out to do. In other cities, I never had a true support system. I had plenty of friends and, at times, caring boyfriends, but I don't know that I ever had someone truly believing in me even when I didn't. Now I do. And I think maybe I need someone in my corner in order to thrive. I think I am one of those people who need people. Because my family left and I was okay with it, I always thought that I was more of a lone wolf. I guess I thought I didn't need anyone.
Well, I admire it,
Ethan says. The waiter sets the guacamole down in front of us. I grab a chip and dip in. But before I can even bring it to my lips, it smells awful. I put the chip down. Oh, God, I say. Is it rancid or something? Ethan says, genuinely confused.
The guacamole?
Smell it, I say. It smells funky.
It does?
He dips a chip in, brings it to his nose, and eats it.
It's fine. It tastes great.
I smell it again and can't stand it. I hold my stomach.
Are you okay?
Ethan asks. Yeah, I say. I just need to get away from that.
You look really pale, and you're sweating, on your forehead a bit.
Just like last night, a wave of nausea runs through me. My throat constricts and turns sour. I'm not sure I'll be able to hold this in very long. I run at full speed to the bathroom, but I don't make it to the toilet. I puke in the sink. Luckily, it's a private bathroom. Ethan comes in and closes the door behind us.
This is the ladies' room, I tell him.
I'm worried about you, he says.
I'm fine, I say, although I am seriously starting to doubt that.
You said you puked last night, too, he says.
Yeah, I tell him, and this morning.
Do you think maybe you have the flu? Should you see a doctor? I mean, why else would you be puking all the time?
The minute he asks the question, I know I don't have the flu. I understand perfectly now why everything in my life has been going so well. The universe is just lining everything up in perfect order so that I can roll through and ruin it the way I always do. Classic Hurricane Hannah. I'm pregnant. I wake up to the sound of someone fumbling around in the dark, but I don't see anyone. I only hear them. Henry? I ask. A figure pops up from the floor.
Sorry,
he says.
I can't find my cell phone. I thought I might have dropped it in here.
It's weird to think that you're here, hovering over me when I'm sleeping, I tell him.
I wasn't hovering, he says. I was crawling.
I laugh. Much worse.
You didn't see it, right? My phone?
He asks me. I shake my head.
Damn it,
he says, and I watch as he absentmindedly pulls at a few hair ties around his wrist. You told me you'd explain the hair ties, I say. I point to my own head. The one he gave me is the one I'm still using to keep my bun together. Luckily, I can now do it myself with little fanfare, but I still don't have a mirror, so I can't be sure it looks good. He laughs.
Good memory. A lot of car accident patients struggle to remember basic details.
I shrug. What can I say? I've always been ahead of the rest.
I started finding hair ties all over the hospital where I worked back in Texas,
he says. I find myself smiling as he sits down. I like that he sits down. I like that he is staying.
And I didn't want to throw them away because they seemed like they would be useful to somebody, so I started collecting them. But then no one ever asked me for one, so they just kept piling up. And then one day, my boss asked me to do something, and I didn't have a piece of paper to write on, so I put a hair tie around my wrist to remind me, sort of like someone might do with a rubber band. Then I started to do it all the time. And then I started to do it for more than one thing at a time, so if there were four things I needed to remember, four hair ties. If I had two things to do, and someone gave me a third task, another hair tie.
How many times have you stood staring at your wrist trying to remember what one of the hair ties was for? He laughs.
Listen, it's not a perfect system.
He bends down for a moment. I assume he thinks he sees his cell phone. He stands back up. He must have been wrong.
Anyway,
he says,
that's my hair tie organizational system.
And the plus is, you have a hair tie for any woman who needs one.
Right,
he says.
But no one has ever asked for one but you.
I smile at him.
How are you feeling?
He asks me.
Okay, no more spasms?
No more spasms.
Good,
he says, as he looks around the room some more for his phone. We could call it, I offer. Your phone, I mean. There is a hospital phone next to me on the bed table. I pull it toward me and pick up the receiver. What's the number? I can't quite interpret the look on his face. What did I do? I ask him.
I can't give you any personal contact information,
he says.
It's against the rules.
I am feeling ever so slightly embarrassed. I put the receiver back in the cradle to save face. Oh, okay. Well, you can dial yourself, I say. I'll close my eyes. He laughs and shakes his head.
It won't do much good anyway,
he tells me.
The ringer's off.
I can tell that both of us want to change the subject. We just aren't sure how.
I tried that Find My Phone app,
Henry offers. Oh, that's great, I say.
It said the phone is located at Angelus Presbyterian.
I laugh. How helpful, I say.
Well, he says, if you see it.
If I see it, I'll ring my little nurse bell.
And I'll come running,
he says. Neither of us has anything left to say, and yet he doesn't leave. He looks at me. We hold each other's gaze for just a second longer than normal. I look away first. I'm distracted by a dull, bluish light that starts flashing in a slow rhythm.
Eureka,
he says. I start laughing as he ducks down. When he pops back up with his phone, he's not at the foot of the bed, where he was before. He's by my side.
I knew I'd find it,
he says. Instinctually, I find myself reaching out toward him, to touch him the way I might a friend. But I quickly remember that he's not my friend, that to touch his arm or hand tenderly might be weird. So I pretend I'm going for a high five. He smiles and enthusiastically claps my hand. Nice work, I say. For a moment, I wonder how things would be different if I could walk, and we weren't in a hospital, but in a bar somewhere. If I'd worn my favorite black shirt and tight jeans, I wonder how this all might be different if there was a beer in my hand and the lights were low because people were dancing, not because people were sleeping. Is it crazy to think he would say hello and introduce himself? Is it crazy to think he would ask me to dance?
Anyway, I should be going,
he says.
But I'll come check on you soon. I don't like to go too many hours without making sure you're still breathing.
And he leaves before I can say goodbye. I don't know. Maybe, just maybe, if Henry and I met at a dinner party, we'd spend the entire night talking, and when the night wound down, he'd offer to walk me to my car.
What is it?
Ethan asks me.
What's the matter? Are you going to vomit again? What can I do?
No, I say, slowly shaking my head. I'm totally fine now. I got my period before I left for L.A. I remember getting it. I remember thinking that I was glad it ended a day sooner than normal. I remember that. I remember that. Totally good, I tell him. I think maybe those Brussels sprouts are still messing with me.
Okay,
he says.
Well, maybe we should head home.
I shake my head. Nope, I tell him. Let's hang out until we can go talk to the vet about Charlemagne.
You're sure?
I look at my phone. I want to run out of here and buy a pregnancy test, but there is no way I could just up and ditch Ethan without him asking what is going on. And I can't share this with him. I can't even bring up the possibility until it's no longer simply a possibility.
All right,
he says.
If you really are feeling okay.
I am. The lying begins.
I'll head out first,
he says,
just so no one thinks we were doing it in here.
His joke catches me off guard, and I find myself laughing out loud. Okay, I say, smiling. He ducks out, and I stay in the bathroom for a minute. I breathe in and out, trying to control my brain and my body. And then I pick up my phone and Google the other thing that could convince me I'm wrong about this, the one piece of evidence I have that maybe I'm not pregnant. Can I be pregnant if I got my period? You cannot have a menstrual period while you are pregnant. My heartbeat slows. I start to calm. This might all just be okay. But some women do have vaginal bleeding during pregnancy. I click on another one. My cousin didn't know she was pregnant for 4 months because she got her period all during her pregnancy. I click again. You may still get your period at the beginning of your pregnancy due to what is called implantation bleeding when the egg implants in the uterus. Crap. Typically, the bleeding will be lighter and shorter than a normal period. I turn off my phone and slump down on the floor. Despite every piece of common sense available to me, I got pregnant. And it isn't by the handsome, charming, perfect man I'm starting to believe is the one. It's by the asshole with a wife and two kids in New York City. I get hold of myself. No good comes from imploding or exploding right now. I breathe in. I open the door. I walk out of the bathroom and join Ethan at the table.
How should we kill the time?
He asks.
Should we get away from this horrible guacamole and go find you a cinnamon roll?
He's going to leave me. My perfect person. The man who jumps at the chance to get me a cinnamon roll. He's going to leave me. I shake my head. You know what? I say. Let's just order some burritos and chow down.
Sounds like heaven,
he says as he flags down a waiter. We order. We talk about his job. We make jokes. And we eat tortilla chips. With every chip I eat and every joke I make, I push the news further into the recesses of my mind. I bury my problems and focus on what is in front of me. I am great at pretending everything is fine. I am great at hiding the truth. I almost believe it myself for a minute. By the time our burritos have come and gone, you'd think I'd forgotten. We head to our cars and plan to meet up at the vet.
You're perfect,
Ethan says as he shuts my car door for me.
You know that?
When he says it, it becomes clear just how much I haven't forgotten. Don't say that, I tell him. It's not true.
You're right, he says. You're too pretty. I need a girl less pretty.
When we get back to the animal hospital, the vet is ready to talk to us. He pulls us into an exam room, and one of the vet techs brings out Charlemagne. She runs right to me. There you are, I say to her. I pick her up and hold her in my arms.
So are you the ones who found her?
The vet asks us.
Yeah,
Ethan says,
running through the street.
The vet looks dismayed.
Well, she's not chipped. She's also not spayed. And she's undernourished. She should be about 2 or 3 pounds heavier,
he says. He is tall, with a thick gray beard and gray hair.
That may not sound like a lot, but on a dog this size? Yeah,
Ethan says.
It's a considerable deficit.
Any idea how old she is? I ask.
Well, her teeth aren't fully in yet, so she's still a puppy.
How young do you think?
No more than 4 months, maybe 5,
he says.
My guess is that she lives with someone who isn't paying too much attention.
Right, I say.
Or it's possible she's been on the street for a while.
I find it hard to believe she's been on the street for a while. Dogs that live out on the street wouldn't run into the middle of the road. That seems to defy the very concept of survival of the fittest. If you are a dog that runs into the middle of the road, especially in the dark of night, then you are probably not going to last long on the mean streets of anywhere.
A lot of times people don't spay their dogs,
the vet continues,
and are surprised when they end up pregnant.
Ha!
Caring for a nursing dog and a litter of puppies when you don't expect to can be overwhelming,
I'll say.
Sometimes people keep them until they can't deal with it anymore and put the puppies out on the street.
Good God. I look at Ethan, who, not knowing how uncomfortably close this man is hitting the nail on the head, seems disturbed by all of it, which makes sense. I am too. I know that people are awful and do terrible things, especially to things that are helpless, especially to animals that are helpless. But when I look at Charlemagne, it's hard to comprehend. I barely know her, and I'm starting to think I'd do anything for her.
So we have no real recourse,
Ethan says,
in terms of finding out who she belongs to.
The vet shrugs.
Well, not through this route, at least. You could put flyers up around where you found her, or go door to door, but either way, if you are at all considering keeping her, I might recommend you do that instead of tracking down an original owner, if there is one.
Oh, Ethan says,
we weren't.
And if we did? I say, interrupting him. Would we just schedule an appointment with you guys to get all of that stuff taken care of? Get her spayed and chipped?
Yeah,
the vet says.
And she'll need a series of shots. We can help you with fattening her up, too. although assuming she has consistent access to food, she'll probably take care of that one on her own.
All right, Ethan says.
Thank you very much for your help.
He extends his hand for a handshake. The vet reciprocates. I do the same.
My pleasure,
he says.
She's a sweetheart. I hope you guys can help her find a good home. If not, contact the front desk, and we can help you try to get her into a no-kill shelter. It's not easy. There are already so many other dogs in the city taking up spots, but we try to help.
By the time we leave the animal hospital, the sun has set and the air is crisp. I have Charlemagne in my arms, her leash wrapped around my hand. She's shaking a bit, maybe because of the cold. I can't help but wonder if it's because she knows her fate is uncertain. What are you thinking? I ask him.
I don't know,
Ethan says. We are standing by our cars. For a moment, I'm stunned that I bought the car just this afternoon. Feels like a lifetime ago.
I can't really have a dog at my place.
I know, I say.
I mean, I want to help her, and I don't want her on the street, but I had no intention of adopting a dog,
he says.
And I don't know how you can adopt her, you know, because...
Because I don't have a place just yet.
Right.
He looks at me. I look at Charlemagne. I'm not bringing her to a shelter. I'm not doing it. With everything that has happened today, my fate is uncertain, too. Charlemagne and I are kindred spirits. We are both directionless idiots, the kind of girls who run out into the street without thinking. I may make a lot of mistakes, and I may act without thinking, and I may be the sort of woman who doesn't even realize she's pregnant when it should be blatantly obvious, but I also know that sometimes I get myself into messes, and then get myself out of them. Maybe I can get Charlemagne and me out of this mess by throwing us into it. Charlemagne and I rode a city bus today with just a backpack and a smile. We are a team. She is mine. I'm not letting her go back to people who mistreat her, I say. Not that we could find them, even if we wanted to. And I'm certainly not leaving her out on the street or headed to a kill shelter. Ethan looks at me. I can tell he understands where I'm coming from, but doesn't necessarily get where I'm heading.
Okay,
he says.
So what do we do?
I'm going to keep her, I say. That's what I'm going to do. She's not his problem. She's my problem. I'm choosing to take care of her. The parallels do not escape me, and maybe that's part of the reason I am doing this. Maybe it's a physical manifestation of what I'm going through emotionally right now. I have a baby that's not his. I'm taking on a dog he didn't ask for. I'm not going to make these things his problem.
Okay,
he says.
Well, she can stay at my place for tonight, and then tomorrow we can figure out a long-term plan.
He says we can figure out a long-term plan. That's all right, I tell him, moving toward my car. I should sleep at Gabby's tonight.
You're not going to stay with me?
I shake my head. I should really sleep there. She won't mind Charlemagne for the night. Yes, she will. Mark is allergic to dogs. Taking Charlemagne back to their apartment is kind of a crappy thing to do. But I need space away from Ethan. I need to be on my own.
She can be at my place, he says, for tonight. Really?
I shake my head again, moving away from him. I open my car door. I put Charlemagne on the passenger seat and shut her in. No, I tell him. It's fine. This is the better plan.
Okay,
he says. He is clearly dejected.
If that's what you want.
I'll call you tomorrow, I tell him. All he says is cool. He says it looking at my feet instead of my face. He's upset, but he doesn't want to show it. So he nods and gets into his car.
I'll talk to you tomorrow, then,
he says out his window. Then he turns on his lights and drives off. I get into my car. I look at Charlemagne. Suddenly, the tears that have been waiting under the surface all night spring forth.
I screwed it all up, Charlemagne, I tell her. I ruined it all.
She doesn't respond. She doesn't look at me.
It was all going to be perfect, and I ruined it.
Charlemagne licks her paw, as if I'm not even talking.
What do I do?
I ask her. If you were watching us from the outside, you might think I expect her to answer. That's how sincere my voice is, how desperate it sounds. And maybe, on some level, it's true. Maybe, if all of a sudden she started talking and told me what I need to do to fix this, I would be more relieved than shocked. Alas, she remains a normal dog instead of a magical one. I put my head on the steering wheel of my brand new used car, and I cry. And I cry, and I cry, and I cry. And I wonder when I have to tell Michael. And I wonder when I have to tell Ethan. And I wonder how I'm going to afford a baby. And I wonder how I could have been so goddamn stupid. And I wonder if maybe the world hates me, if maybe I am fated to always be screwing up my life and never getting ahead. I wonder if I'll be a single mom forever, if Ethan will ever talk to me again, if my parents will come meet my kid, or if I'll have to fly internationally with a baby on holidays. And then I wonder what Gabby will say. I imagine her telling me it will all be okay. I imagine her telling me this baby was meant to be. I imagine her telling me that I'm going to be a great mother. And then I wonder if that's true, if I will be. And then, finally, I wonder about my baby. And the realization hits me. I'm going to have a baby. I find myself smiling just the tiniest bit through my heavy, fearful tears.
I'm going to have a baby,
I say to Charlemagne.
I'm going to be a mom.
This time she hears me, and while she doesn't start magically talking, she does stand up, walk over the center console, and sit in my lap.
It's you and me, I say, and a baby. We can do that, right?
She curls into my lap and goes to sleep, but I think it speaks volumes that I believe if she could talk, she'd say yes. It's early in the morning when I hear a knock on my door. I'm alone in my room. I've been up for only a few minutes. My bun is half undone around my shoulders. Ethan peeks his head in.
Hey, he says, so quiet it's almost a whisper. Can I come in?
Of course, I say. It's nice seeing him. I may have gotten a bit infatuated with the idea that he and I have something romantic left between us, but I can see now that we don't. I will probably always love him on some level, always hold a spot for him in my heart. But dating again, being together, that would be moving backward, wouldn't it? I moved to Los Angeles to put the past behind me, to move into the future. I moved to Los Angeles to change, and that's what I'm going to do. But that doesn't mean that we can't still mean something to each other, that we can't be friends. I pat the side of the bed, inviting him to sit right here next to me. He does.
How are you feeling?
He asks. He has a bakery box in his hand. I'm hoping I know what it is. Is that a cinnamon roll? I ask him, smiling. He smiles back and hands it over.
You remembered, I say.
How could I forget?
Wow, I say as I open the box. This is a huge one.
I know, he says. I saw them a few years ago at this bakery on the west side, and I thought of you. I knew you'd love them.
This is so exciting. I mean, I'll have to eat this with a knife and fork. It's way too big for me to eat on my own. I resolve to wait and share it with Henry tonight. I hand it back to Ethan. Can you put it on the table?
You don't want it now?
I do sort of want it now, but I'd rather wait for Henry. I shake my head.
You didn't answer my question, he says, about how you were feeling.
I wave him off. I'm okay. I'm feeling good. There are some ups and downs, but you've caught me at an up moment. Word on the street is I get to try out my wheelchair today. I watch as the look on Ethan's face changes. I get a glimpse, just for a moment, of how sad it must be to hear me excited about a wheelchair. But I refuse to be brought down about this. This is where I'm at in life. I need a wheelchair. That's okay. Onward and upward. Ethan looks off to the side and then down at the floor. He's looking everywhere but at me. What's up? I ask. What's bothering you?
It just all seems so senseless,
he says, looking up at me.
The idea of you being hit by a car, almost losing you. When I heard what happened to you, I immediately thought, you know, she should have been with me instead. If I had been able to persuade you to stay out with me, you wouldn't have been standing in the middle of the road when... I mean, what if this all could have been prevented if I'd done something different?
It's sort of absurd, isn't it? How we grab on to facts and consequences, looking to blame or exonerate ourselves. This has nothing to do with him. I chose to go home with Gabby and Mark because that's the choice I made. 9 billion choices I've made over the course of my life could have changed where I am right now and where I'm headed. There's no sense focusing on just one, unless you want to punish yourself. I've looked at this problem up, down, and sideways, I tell him. I've lain in this bed for days wondering if we were all supposed to do something different.
And?
And? It doesn't matter.
What do you mean it doesn't matter?
I'm saying things happen for a reason. I'm saying there's a point to this. I didn't stick around with you that night because I wasn't supposed to. That wasn't what I was meant to do. He looks at me. He doesn't say anything. You know, I continue, maybe you and I would have gone out that night and stayed out partying and drinking until the early morning, and maybe we could have walked around the city all night, talking about our feelings and rehashing old times. Or maybe we would have left that bar and gone to another bar, where we ran into Matt Damon, and he would say that we seemed like really cool people, and he wanted to give us $100 million to start a cinnamon roll factory. Ethan laughs. We don't know what would have happened, but whatever would have happened wasn't supposed to happen.
You really believe that?
Ethan says. I think I have to, I tell him. Otherwise, my life is an absolute disaster. Otherwise, my baby is gone for no reason. But yes, I say, I really do believe that. I believe I'm destined for something. We are all destined for something. And I believe that the universe, or God, or whatever you want to call it, I believe it keeps us on the right path. And I believe I was supposed to choose Gabby. I wasn't supposed to stay with you. Ethan is quiet, and then he looks up at me and says,
Okay, it wasn't... I guess it wasn't meant to be.
Besides, I say, trying to make a joke, let's be honest, if I'd stuck around with you, we'd just have ended up making out and ruining everything. This way is better. This way, we can finally be friends. Good, real friends. He looks at me, looks me right in the eye. We don't say anything to each other for a moment. Ethan finally speaks up.
Hannah, I...
He stops halfway through his sentence when Henry comes walking in the door.
Oh, sorry,
Henry says.
I didn't know you had visitors.
I feel myself perk up at the sight of him. He's wearing the same blue scrubs from last night. I thought you were night shift, I say. Deanna is my day nurse.
I'm covering, he says, just for this morning. I'll come back if I'm interrupting.
Oh, Ethan says. You're not interrupting anything, I say over him. Ethan gathers himself and looks at me.
You know what? I should be getting to work,
he says. Okay. You'll come visit me again soon?
Yeah,
he says.
Or maybe you'll be out of here in a few days.
Yeah, I say. Maybe.
Anyway, he says, enjoy the cinnamon roll.
Henry laughs.
This is a girl who loves her cinnamon rolls,
he says. Ethan looks at him.
I know, he says. That's why I brought her one.
I took 3 pregnancy tests in the bathroom of the CVS just down the street from Gabby's place. I could have left Charlemagne in the car, but I felt terrible doing that, even with the windows cracked, so I put her in the backpack and brought her with me. She yipped in the bathroom once or twice, but no one seemed to care. All 3 sticks were positive, and there wasn't a single part of me that was surprised. Now it's almost 9 p.m., and I'm pulling up in front of Gabby's. She must hear my car, because she looks out the window. I see her and laugh. She looks like a crotchety old lady. I'm half expecting her to call out, "What's all that racket?" By the time I open her front door, Charlemagne trailing behind me on the leash, Gabby is standing on the other side of the door. I feel bad about what I'm doing, by the way. I feel bad about bringing a dog into Mark's house. I know he's allergic, and I'm doing it anyway. But I couldn't stay with Ethan, and I couldn't abandon Charlemagne. So here we are.
"You bought a car?"
Gabby says. She's in her pajamas. "Where's Mark?" I ask her. Charlemagne is behind me. I don't think Gabby can see her.
"He's working late again," Gabby says.
"I have some news," I tell her.
"I know, you bought a car."
"Well, I have more news." Charlemagne yips. Gabby looks at me askance. I pull Charlemagne around to the front.
"You have a dog?"
"I am adopting her," I tell her. "I'm really sorry."
"You are adopting a dog?"
"Is it okay if she stays here just for tonight? I bought Mark a whole bunch of allergy pills." I take the 5 packages of medication that I got in the over-the-counter antihistamine aisle. Gabby looks at me.
I guess?"
"Great, thank you. I have news."
"You have more news?"
I nod, but Gabby continues to stare at me. I stare back, unsure if she's really prepared for this, unsure if I'm really prepared for this.
"We should maybe sit down," I tell her. "I need to sit down for this?"
"I need to," I tell her. We move over to her couch. I pick up Charlemagne and put her in my lap. Quickly, Charlemagne moves off me and sits on the sofa. I see Gabby waver about whether she wants a dog on her sofa, so I pick up Charlemagne and put her on the floor. "I'm pregnant." Hearing it out loud, hearing the words come out of my mouth, brings forth a flood of emotions. I start to cry. I bury my head in my hands. Gabby doesn't say much at first, but soon I feel her hands on my wrists. I feel her pull my hands away from my face. I feel her take my fingers and put them on my chin, forcing me to face her.
"You know it's going to be okay, right?"
she says. I look at her through my tears. I nod and do my best to say yes.
"Does Ethan know?"
Gabby asks. I shake my head.
"No one does, except you and Charlemagne."
"Who is Charlemagne?"
she asks me. I look at the dog and point to her.
"Oh,"
Gabby says.
"Right, makes sense. I didn't think we were still naming people, Charlemagne."
I start crying again.
"Hey," she says. "Come on, this is good news."
"I know,"
I say through my tears.
"It's Michael's,"
she says, as if it's just dawning on her.
"Yeah,"
I say. Charlemagne starts whining and jumping, trying to join us on the couch. Gabby looks at her and then picks her up and puts her in my lap. She curls up and closes her eyes. I do feel better, honestly, having her in my lap.
"Okay, stop crying for a minute,"
Gabby says. I sniffle and look at her.
"We are going to handle this, and we are going to be fine."
"We?"
"Well, I'm not going to let you go through this alone, you moron," she says.
The way she says the word moron makes me feel more loved than I've felt in a long time. She says it as if I'd be a complete idiot to think I was ever alone. And to know that the idea is absolutely absurd to her, to know that it's so far-fetched as to make me a moron, it's a nice feeling.
"You know years from now you're going to look back on this as the best thing that ever happened to you, right?"
I snort at her. "I'm having a baby with a married man, and I'm pretty sure it's going to ruin my relationship with my new old boyfriend."
First of all, she says, let's not go assuming things. You never know what Ethan will say.
You know what I'm pretty sure he's not going to say? Hey, Hannah, I'm super excited to take on the responsibilities of raising another man's baby.
I'm right, of course, which is why Gabby changes the subject. You are going to love this baby, she says. You know that, right? You are such a loving person. You have so much love to give, and you are so loyal to the people you love. Do you have any idea what a great mom you are going to be? Do you have any idea how loved this kid is going to be? The love it will have from its Aunt Gabby will eclipse the sun.
I laugh, despite myself.
Hannah, you can do this. And one day soon, you're not going to imagine how you ever found meaning in your life before you did.
Maybe she's right. What if your dad fires me before I'm even hired? Hi, hello, you gave me this job when you thought I wasn't pregnant, and now you're stuck with me.
This is why you puked at dinner, Gabby says.
Should have been your dad's first clue. To be honest, it probably should have been my first clue.
Would you listen to yourself? We're talking about my dad, the man who picked up the boutonnieres for our dates to the prom. My dad once sat there with a pair of tweezers pulling tiny pieces of glass out of your foot when you dropped my mom's favorite crystal vase.
Oh, don't remind me, I say.
But that's my point. My dad loves you. Not like, oh, I'm telling you my dad loves you. I mean, he has love in his heart for you. My father loves you. Both my parents do. They like being there for you. My dad's not going to fire you when he finds out you're pregnant. He and my mom are going to jump for joy and tell everyone who will listen that the generation of grandchildren is finally arriving. I laugh. Also, he can't fire you for being pregnant. It's illegal. That's Human Resources 101.
The minute she says Human Resources, I remember talking to Joyce. I remember her telling me I have insurance and maternity leave. For a flash, I almost feel as if Gabby is right, that things will be okay.
Okay, I say. So I still have a job. And you still have me, and my parents, and Mark, and...
She looks at the dog and smiles.
And Charlemagne.
I have to call Michael and tell him, right?
Yes? No? She says. I have no idea. But I'll think about it with you. We'll weigh the pros and cons.
Yeah?
Yeah. And we will come up with an answer. And then you'll do it.
She makes it sound so easy. And Ethan might not leave me?
He might not, she says,
although I can tell by her voice that she has less confidence in this one.
But I can tell you, if he does, it's because it wasn't meant to be.
You think things are meant to be? I ask her. For some reason, I think I'll feel better if things are meant to be. It gets me off the hook, doesn't it? If things are meant to be, it means I don't have to worry so much about consequences and mistakes. I can take my hands off the wheel. Believing in fate is like living on cruise control.
Are you kidding? I absolutely do. There is a force out there. Call it what you will. I happen to believe that it's God, she says. But it pushes us in the right direction, keeps us on the right path. If Ethan says he can't handle the fact that you're pregnant, he's not the one for you. You were meant for someone else, and we will handle that together, too. We will handle all of this together.
I close my eyes briefly, and when I open them, the world seems a little brighter. So, what do I do now?
Tomorrow morning, we're getting you prenatal vitamins and making an appointment to see an OBGYN so we can figure out how far along you are.
It would have to be at least 8 weeks, I tell her. I haven't slept with Michael in a while.
Okay, she says, so we know that. Still, we'll make the appointment.
Oh no, I say out loud. I had a beer last week at the bar.
It's okay, I hear her say. It's going to be fine. It happens. You weren't wasted. I saw you.
I am a terrible mother. Already I am a terrible mother.
You're not a terrible mother if that's what you're worried about, Gabby says, knowing how my brain works almost better than I do.
She picks Charlemagne up off my lap and gestures for me to get up. She leads the two of us into my bedroom.
It happens, and it's okay. And starting tomorrow morning, you're going to learn all the things you have to stop doing and all the things you have to start doing, and you're going to be phenomenal at all of it. You really think that? I ask her. I really think that, she says. I put on my pajamas. She gets in on one side of the bed. Charlemagne lies down with her. She's a cute one, this little Charlemagne, Gabby says. How did she end up at my house? I laugh. It's a long story, I say, in which I make a snap decision that I now realize was probably hormone-driven. Gabby laughs. Well, she's precious, she says. I like having her around. I look at Charlemagne. Me too. I hate Mark's stupid dog allergy, she says. Let's keep her in here all night and see if he itches. I bet you he won't. I bet you it's all in his head. I laugh and get into bed next to Gabby. She holds my hand. Everything is going to be great, you know, she says. I breathe in and out. I hope so. No, she says. Say it with me. Everything is going to be great. Everything is going to be great, I say. Everything is going to be great, she says again. Everything is going to be great. You know, I almost believe it. Gabby turns the light off.
When you wake up in the middle of the night, terrified because you remember that you're pregnant, she says, wake me. I'm here.
Okay, I say. Thank you. Charlemagne snuggles up between the two of us, and I wonder if maybe it's actually Gabby, Charlemagne, and me who were meant to be.
Mark and I have started talking about when to have a baby, she says.
Wow, really? Even though I'm actually having a baby, I can't quite wrap my brain around people having babies.
Yeah, she says. Maybe soon. I could hurry up and get pregnant. We could have kids the same age.
We'd force them to be best friends, I say.
Naturally, she says. Or maybe I'll just leave Mark. You and I could raise your baby together. That way I don't even need to have one. Just me and you and the baby.
With Charlemagne? I ask.
Yeah, she says. The world's most adorable lesbian couple.
I laugh.
Only problem is, I'm not attracted to you, she says.
Ditto, I tell her.
But just think of it. This baby would be raised by an interracial lesbian couple. It would get into all the good schools. Think of the pedigree. I've always said God made a mistake making us straight women.
I laugh and then correct her. I'm trying to believe that God doesn't make mistakes. Henry checks some stuff and puts the clipboard down.
Dr. Winters says we can try the wheelchair,
he tells me. His voice is solicitous, as if we're doing something taboo.
Now, I say, me and you?
Well, the female nurses can't bench press as much as I can. So, yeah, I'll be the one lifting you into the chair.
You never know, I say. Maybe every single one of those nurses can bench the same as you, and you don't know because you never asked.
Well, he says, regardless of who can bench press what, it's my job to lift you. But before I do, we've got some stuff to cover.
Oh, I say. Okay, go for it. He tells me it may hurt. He tells me it's going to be an adjustment. We can't do much at first, just get into the wheelchair and learn to move around a bit. Simply moving into the chair initially might wear me out. Then Henry starts unhooking me from a few of the machines that have come to feel like my third and fourth arms. He leaves the IV in. He tells me that while I'm in the hospital, that's coming with us.
Do you feel ready?
He asks me once everything is set up and I'm all that's left to deal with. As I ever will, I tell him. I'm scared. What if this hurts? What if this doesn't work? What if I have to stay in this bed for the rest of my life and I can never move and this is it for me? What if my life is sugar-free jello and dry chicken dinners? I'll just lie here in a hospital gown that doesn't close in the back for the rest of my waking days. Oh, God. Oh, God,
This gown doesn't close in the back. Henry is going to see my ass.
You're going to see my butt, aren't you? I ask as he moves toward me. To his credit, he doesn't laugh at me.
I won't look, he says.
I'm not sure that answer is good enough.
I'm a professional nurse, Hannah. Give me a little credit. I'm not going to sneak a peek at your tush for kicks.
I can't help but laugh as I consider my choices, which is to say that I consider that I don't really have a choice at all if I want to get out of this bed.
Cool,
he says. Cool, I say. He takes my legs and spins me. I inch myself toward him. He gets up close to me. He puts his arm around my back, his other arm under my legs.
One,
he says. Two, I say with him. Three, we say, as he lifts me, and then, within seconds, I'm in the wheelchair. I'm in a wheelchair. Someone just had to lift me into a wheelchair. I was going to have a baby, and it died.
Okay,
Henry says. Yeah, I say, shaking my head and pushing the bad thoughts out of my mind. Yes, I add. I'm excited about this. Where are we going?
Not much of anywhere this go-around, he says. Right now, we just want to get you comfortable in the chair and familiar with it. Maybe just wheel around the room a bit.
I turn and look at him. Oh, come on, I say. I want out of this room. I've been peeing in a bedpan for days. I want to see something. He looks at his watch.
I'm supposed to check on other patients.
I get it. He has a job. I'm a part of his job. Okay, I say. Tell me how it works. He starts showing me how to push the wheels and how to stop. We roam around the room. I push myself so hard that I crash into the wall, and Henry runs toward me and grabs me.
Whoa there, he says. Take it slow.
Sorry, I say. Got away from me.
I guess we know you probably won't ever be a race car driver.
Pretty sure I ruled that out when I got hit by a car. Henry could, at this moment, feel bad for me, but he doesn't. I like that. I like that so much.
Well, don't be a pilot either, he says. Or did you already cross that one off because you were hit by a plane?
I look up at him, indignant. Do you talk to all of your patients this way? I ask him. There it is, the question I've been pondering for days, and I said it as if I didn't care about his answer in the slightest.
Only the bad ones,
he says. Then he leans down and grabs the arms of my wheelchair. His face is in mine, so close that I can see the pores on his skin, the specks of gold in his eyes. If this were any other man in any other situation, I'd think he was going to kiss me.
If you happen to roll yourself out of this room,
he says with a sly smile across his face,
I'm sure it would take a minute before I caught up with you and wheeled you back in here.
Henry slowly takes his arms off my chair, clearing the way. I don't look at the door. I stare at him. If I just happened to scoot my wheels this way, I say, and push myself right out into the hallway,
I might not notice until you'd had a nice breath of air out there.
So this is okay? I say, looking at him but heading for the door. He laughs.
Yeah, that's okay.
And if I get to the threshold? He shrugs.
We'll see what happens.
I keep rolling myself forward. My arms are already tired from pushing myself. If I just roll on right past it? He laughs.
You should probably take your eyes off me and watch where you're going,
he says, just as I ram a wheel into the doorframe. Oops, I say, backing up and then straightening. And then I roll myself right out into the hallway. It's busier than I would have thought. There are more stations, more nurses, than I get a glimpse of in my room. And I'm sure it's the very same air I breathe from my hospital bed, but it seems fresher somehow out here. The hallway is even blander, more banal than what I imagined from my bed. The floor underneath my wheels is squeaky clean. The walls on either side of me are an innocuous shade of oatmeal. But in some ways, I might as well have landed on the moon. That's how novel and foreign it feels for a split second.
All right, Magellan,
Henry says, grabbing the